This weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that more and more businesses are switching to Vonage? Seems like they know something you don't know, like how they can unify all their offices nationwide on their own private connection to the cloud. Or maybe they're saving tons of headaches by eliminating unwieldy PBX phone systems. Make the switch to better. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or visit Vonage.com and find out why so many businesses are switching. That's 1-800-5-VONAGE or Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Do we need pet bereavement at work? I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Anyone who's lost a dog or cat can tell you the pain and how it weighs on a family. Should companies offer time off, or is that going too far?
The unpleasant surprise you may encounter this fall at America's most visited national park.
On the tech front, are we waving goodbye to tablet computers? Their sales numbers are discouraging.
And the skill that NFL teams are not teaching their quarterbacks. How to slide to avoid getting steamrolled by an angry linebacker.
One of the problems is that it's really hard to practice sliding during training. It's hard to think of a good drill for a couple reasons. One, you don't want to get a risk getting a cleat stuck in the turf and, you know, tearing a ligament that way. Number two, these guys are practicing on artificial turf that's stuffed with rubber pellets, so you get some messy rug burns if you try to practice sliding.
Wall Street Journal reporter Stu Wu on teaching quarterbacks to slide. He's here later in the hour. As we recognize Military Family Appreciation Month here in November, the Real Warriors campaign is asking Americans to honor the sacrifices of America's warriors and military families by encouraging all service members, veterans, and military families to seek care for psychological health concerns. We're joined now by Major retired Jeff Hall and his wife Sherry on the phone from Oklahoma. Major, give us your story about when you came back.
When I came back from my second tour in Iraq, I was transferred to the Joint Readiness Training Center in Louisiana, where I spent an additional few years on a battlefield there preparing soldiers. And I really didn't realize what was going on with me at the time. But I started manifesting a lot of anger and a lot of real odd behavior, where I was physically trying to correct problems instead of, you know, coaching and everything else. And I began to get into a little bit of trouble with my command because of the way I was acting. But I had no idea what was going on with me until my wife confronted me with something that my daughter told me. And that was, I think Dad's going through a midlife crisis.
Oh.
What actually was happening was I was bringing my own terror into the house. Not in a physical way, but just anger and just not myself, not who I was. And that brought me to my knees. Literally, I couldn't leave my house after that. And so Sherry had no choice but to call the command to let them know I wasn't coming in. And I figured my career was over, but what actually really happened was my command wrapped their arms around me and got me to the place that I needed for care.
Was it evident right away, Sherry, that something was going on when he came back, or not right away?
Well, in December of 2005, when he came home from his second deployment, we were at the redeployment ceremony there at Fort Riley, Kansas, and when he walked in the door of the hangar, I could tell by the look on his face, I could just tell by looking at his eyes that something wasn't right.
Really?
I did ask him if he wanted to, you know, maybe talk to somebody, and he said, no, I'll be fine. But 2.5 years after that is when he really kind of hit that brick wall. They come home, used to go in 1,000 miles an hour, and they get home, and that slows way down for them. And so I think for Jeff, it was, you know, that adrenaline rush wasn't there really. So to speak. But, yeah, it was 2.5 years after he came home that we actually reached out to get help. Those 2.5 years were a struggle, though. There were, you know, quite a few things that I could see that were wrong.
We're speaking with retired Army Major Jeff Hall and his wife Sherry from Oklahoma. They're from the Real Warriors campaign, and we're talking about reaching out for help with psychological health concerns, especially our returning soldiers. So we know that this is a difficult thing for most servicemen and women to discuss, to bring up, to reach out for help. What is step one here, Jeff?
Well, what the Real Warriors campaign does so gracefully is they have tried to take the stigma away from seeking care for post-traumatic stress or whatever. The very first step is, and sometimes it's very hard because you can't. I didn't recognize it in myself. But when your performance starts to shut down and you start recognizing things aren't quite right, go seek care. Go talk to somebody that's professional. And I've always said this: if the first person you see isn't the right fit, find somebody else. But do it. Do yourself a favor. Do your family a favor, and go seek care.
If you as the military spouse sense that something's wrong, and you go to the service member and say something's not right, what's the typical response, Jeff? Like, what the hell do you know, right? You didn't go through what I went through. How would you know, right?
Right. And at first, you know, Jeff was like, "I'll be fine. I just got a little angry. I'll be all right."
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That.
No, you're right. It was a what the hell do you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, my experiences were very personal to me, and I didn't really feel like they needed to know. So when she actually confronted me, it was very, very strange. When she confronted me with the midlife crisis thing,
yeah,
it was like being shot between the eyes. It floored me because I thought I was just getting away with being, you know, terrible.
Oh.
But I wasn't, and that's kind of what turned the tide. Sherry learned how to be tough back to me, which is the language that us military men know.
When you finally spoke up, Sherry, were you at a point, not to get too personal, but I mean, were you at the point where you thought the marriage was close to ending?
Yeah, I didn't know if we'd be together by the end of that year.
Wow.
I really didn't.
Okay.
At the rate things were going. And, you know, when Jeff was in his deepest depression, I could not leave him alone because I was afraid of, you know, what might happen with the suicidal thoughts. So I just tried my hardest. And even there were times when he'd say, "I don't know why you're still here. I don't know why you leave."
Oh,
well,
geez.
I love you. I'm not going to leave you behind. I'm not going to leave you here to explain to the rest of the family, you know, what is going on when I don't understand it myself. I'm here to learn this with you and go through this with you. That's what we do. We're married. That's what a husband and wife do together.
Oh, quite the story. Major retired Jeff Hall and his wife Sherry in Oklahoma. 13 minutes after the hour. On This Weekend. Mailing your letters and packages has just gotten a lot easier thanks to Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can mail and ship anything, anywhere, using just your computer and printer. No more trips to the post office. It's so easy. Anyone can do it. Just click, print, and mail. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage right from your desk. Stamps.com does all the work for you. They even give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. The setup? Well, that's easy, too. Within minutes, you'll be printing your very own postage, and you never have to go to the post office again. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com, then enter Deal.
They're spoiled, they're demanding, and they're ruining travel for everyone else. That's according to consumer advocate Chris Elliott, who calls these entitled folks with lousy attitudes silver spoon travelers. But he says it doesn't have to be that way. Chris, who are these folks?
Well, I mean, you've seen these people. They're the ones who crowd around the gate just before the plane takes off, trying to get those last couple of seats for upgrades. And they all feel like they deserve that last seat. And sometimes they do incredibly obnoxious things. I mean, I discovered people who had gone on tirades inside the aircraft, people who had, well, you know, one person was seated next to another person in first class and demanded that they give up their seat so that someone else could sit with them. I mean, they're doing all sorts of really unbelievable things. And you know, the point I made in the story was that it's time to call these people out. When you're behaving obnoxiously, it doesn't matter what class of service you're sitting in, you're behaving obnoxiously, and it's time to say enough is enough.
Explain that one about the guy in first class who asked the passenger next to him to move so one of his friends could sit in first class.
That's right. Well, this was told to me by someone who was a frequent flyer, happened to be sitting in first class next to someone, and that person said, look, I've got a friend who's in economy class, and I am a Delta Medallion member, and as such,
oh, man,
this friend of mine deserves to sit with me, so you need to stand up and go to the back of the plane and trade seats with my friend. And she said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to do that.
Here's your medallion for you right here, buddy. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so this stuff seems like it's happening between some of these entitled travelers and other travelers, and at other times between those elite travelers and gate agents, for example. So how can this all be managed?
Yeah, it's not even so much an airline thing. As I say in the story, Ground Zero is the first class cabin of your next flight, but it happens all over. It happens actually in hotels. There was that very well-publicized incident over the summer with something called Waffle Rage, where someone decided that they didn't have to wait in line at breakfast, and they cut into the front of the line and started what could best be described as a race riot. There were people who were hitting each other, and the police had to be called, and they were all expelled. So, you know, it doesn't just happen on planes. What can be done about it? Well, I think calling people out, first of all, and saying, look, we are all going to the same place, and we, you know, one of us isn't better than the other. And I think that's really the problem, is that there are people who honestly believe that they're not just entitled to a better class of service, but that they are actually better than everyone else on the plane. And that's very dangerous thinking right there, I think.
Where did this all come from?
It started, I think, when with these loyalty programs. The loyalty programs that we have today are extremely addictive. They force you to make purchases that you wouldn't normally make, but they also tell you that you're special when, in fact, you are not special. if you have a platinum card, the airline is going to do all sorts of things to make you think that you are very, very special. You deserve to sit in first class. You're better than the people in the back of the plane. And that simply is not true. So I think that what we have to do is really rethink the class system as it is now. Give a little bit of dignity to the people in the back, a little bit of space. Right now, there's not so much space anymore. It's been taken away and given to the people in the front of the plane who now have these lie flat seats. And the other thing is that the loyalty programs have to be reformed. Right now, they're just using so much dangerous rhetoric and trying to convince us that if we've got that coveted elite status, that platinum card, that we somehow are better. And that's really not productive. And that's where I think a lot of these rage incidents come from, is that people think they are better than everyone else.
Wow. We're speaking with Christopher Elliott, consumer advocate, also author of a book entitled How to Be the World's Smartest Traveler. And we're talking about putting entitled travelers in their place. How long has this been going on, by the way? Have you tracked this stuff?
Well, I've been covering the industry for more than 20 years, and it has gotten progressively worse. You know, it used to be a time not so long ago when people in the back of the plane you were able to check at least one bag along with, you know, when you were flying, and it actually came with the price of your ticket.
Yeah.
You were actually able to make a seat reservation. You had a little bit of room, not a lot, but, you know, before airline deregulation, you had about 36 inches of seat pitch, between 34 and 36 inches.
Yeah.
And that actually is enough to, you know, move your legs around a little bit. Now it's gotten so much worse. You have less space. You have no service. You have to pay extra for everything. And the people in the front of the plane have everything. They've got lie-flat seats, gourmet meals, nannies, showers, piano bars, you name it. And so it's gotten too far. And we just have to say enough is enough.
Thanks, Chris. Consumer advocate Chris Elliott. Can you just imagine? Piano bar, nannies, all in first class. 22 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Family leave laws, as you know, don't necessarily provide time off for a pet's sickness or death, should they? If you've lost a cat or dog, you know the pain. But some employers wonder where they would draw the line. If you grant leave after the death of a dog, for example, some argue, what about a fish? This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka explores.
If you're a pet owner, you may know the grief of losing a pet. If you're not, you may not get what all the fuss is about. Here to talk to us about the challenges of grieving for a pet at work is Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. Sue, can the grief of losing a pet be equated to other kinds of grief?
It can. Research shows that about 1 in 5 pet lovers do experience some of the same symptoms at the death of their pet as they would if they had lost a human relative. And about 1 in 3 say it lasts 6 months or more.
Do people ask for time off or need time off to grieve their pets?
Well, they do need time off. People who counsel them say they need a few days to a week. Many don't ask. They're either embarrassed to think coworkers will roll their eyes, or else they're afraid of losing control emotionally if they even bring the subject up at work.
So do you think they make up other excuses to take time off?
Absolutely. Many say, oh, I'm taking a sick day, or I have, you know, some business to do. They just don't feel they're able to go to work. And interestingly, some employers grant time off kind of quietly for pet bereavement the same way. They just say, you know, take whatever you need, take a few days under personal time off policies.
What are some of those companies, Sue, and how does that work?
Mars, Inc., the big candy and pet food company, has some units that give 1 or more days time off for bereavement. VMware, Maxwell Health, Replacements are very pet-friendly companies that simply allow employees openly to take time off, very pet friendly, and they use vacation time or personal time off.
Do you see this as a growing trend? I mean, we are spending billions of dollars on our pets in this country.
We are, and I think it's surfacing more in the workplace. I think people are feeling more able to talk about their love for their animals as more people own pets. And also, employers are joining the trend. They're trying to find ways to really connect with recruits and keep employees loyal. And so sometimes having a pet-friendly workplace is the way to do that.
Where do companies, though, draw the line? Are we talking about bereavement for just cats and dogs?
This is a kind of almost comical problem. Many employers don't have a pet bereavement policy for that reason. They're wondering, well, you know, what about a tank of fish? So I think that it can be a little vague. Companies do tend to favor dogs. There are some companies that only allow dogs, for example, to come to work. If you have a pet cobra next door at the desk, it might not be too friendly for some employees. So, yeah, that's another reason I think employers are a little wary.
All right, you're not a pet owner. How does this make you feel if you're seeing people taking time off for this?
Well, I think some people are a little incredulous, to be honest. They're like, what? Are you really taking time off for a pet? Those were some of the responses I got from people I interviewed. And I think that, you know, that it simply does divide the workplace. There's some people who care deeply and others who just don't get it, and never the twain shall meet. So there's a lot of eye rolling that goes on, and many pet owners just quash their feelings to avoid that kind of skepticism.
The Wall Street Journal's Sue Schellenbarger with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, how tourists are being harassed at America's most visited national park.
You don't have to be a retail giant or government agency to be the victim of a costly data breach. If you run a website and collect customer data, your small to mid-sized business is just as likely to be targeted by hackers. The Barracuda Web Application Firewall provides cost-effective, instant security against automated and targeted attacks, making this WAF a must-have for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Web App Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/WAF.
Warning for park goers. Black bears of the Smoky Mountains are starving this fall, and their foraging is bringing some of them far afield of where they normally search for food. While bear attacks are rare, Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter in Atlanta says officials in and around Great Smoky Mountains National Park are concerned and warning people to be careful. Cameron, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
This is a problem that happens periodically where, you know, bears love to eat acorns and cherries and walnuts, particularly this time of year. They're stuffing their faces, getting ready for, you know, for the winter so they can go into their dens. This year, for various reasons that no one's really 100% positive on, but the cherry crop collapsed and the acorn crop collapsed, so bears are really hungry. So they're heading out of the forests where they normally hang out, and they're ranging around really far for food. And that means they're encountering more people, and that's a problem.
Wow. All right, so dumpsters, garbage cans at home, things like that are kind of the newfound targets?
Right. I mean, officials, you know, wildlife officials and wildlife biologists are warning. Just do. You got to keep your garbage cans sealed, and bear you know, have these bear locks on them. You got to keep your grills clean. Don't put groceries in your car. A woman sent me a really interesting series of photographs of a bear in her parking lot at her office, popping open the door of her car.
Whoa,
and
geez.
Once they're in your car, do not try to get them out. Just let them do their thing, because otherwise they're gonna. If you try to scare them out, they're gonna start ripping up your car. And this is happening mostly around the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which is the most visited park in the national park in the United States.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter. His piece is called "Starving Bears Harass Tourists." And a lot of this is happening in the Smoky Mountains. So is it at all acceptable to say just smack a camper upside the head just once if you see them feeding bears or leaving food out? Or is that just largely frowned upon?
I would call wildlife officials and you could tell them politely that they're being idiots.
Right.
Because they're causing... one person, they have a slogan among wildlife biologists... garbage kills bears, and they don't mean they choke on the pollution. They mean it just turns them into animals that aren't afraid. So you had a situation where a bear tried to climb into a van where there was a kid because the parents were, you know, unloading the van, and that bear had to be shot. So you have to realize these are giant, beautiful, but very dangerous creatures, and they're not your friends, and they're not Smokey the Bear. They're wild animals.
All right, so what about the potential, Cam, then, for next year? If this thing with the acorns and the berries is happening now, is this issue still going to be around?
No, I think it, but it will. I think we're continuing, as the area continues to grow, and if more and more people visit the park, when these cyclical problems occur, then you're going to have more and more. People are just going to have to be very careful about bears. And this should not be a problem next year. Last year, for example, was the largest acorn crop anyone can ever remember. So it's just nature doing its thing, and the bear population is shrinks and grows in comparison to how much crop is out there.
Oh, okay.
And it's just nature doing its thing. But now we have tons and tons of humans around, so that's where the problems come in.
All right, I know you spend time there. You lace up the boots and get in that park. What have you seen this?
So I have actually a colleague, Mike Estrell, is from Canada, and he was telling me a story about encountering a bear up there and literally doing what they tell you to do, which is stand up and make a lot of noise and wave your hands and try to sort of frighten the bear to go away. And he did it. His other three friends shrunk away, but the bear stood up on his hind legs and threatened him, but then ran away. So it worked.
Wow.
But do not run away from a bear. That is also the other message, because then they think you're prey.
All right. Thanks, Cameron. Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhirter in Atlanta. I pressed him for video of Mike Estrell, his colleague, kind of flailing about trying to scare the bear. Haven't gotten it yet. Not sure I will. It's 21 minutes now before the hour. On This Weekend, is the sun beginning to set on tablet computers? Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group in San Jose, says tablets are in trouble. Rob, explain.
Well, bellwether for tablets is the iPad. And if you've been watching Apple's numbers, they've been dropping almost 20% year over year. And at that rate, of course, the iPad goes away in 5 years, though granted it'll probably be 20% year over year as the base gets smaller, and so it won't actually go away in 5 years. The reality here isn't that the damn things, the people aren't buying tablets. They do continue to buy tablets. What's happened is the churn has dropped off, so people aren't replacing them as quickly. They're finding the tablet that they have is good enough, and they're carrying it through. And to a large extent, that they rotated back to laptop computers for business, and as smartphones get bigger, more often than not, they're rotating the smartphone instead of the tablet, and they're doing a lot of the stuff they used to do on the tablet on the smartphone. So it's a more of a churn issue than it is necessarily a full displacement issue, but it is a risk for Apple in the segment, because the products like Surface are pushing from the top down, and products like the iPhone 6 Plus are pushing from the smartphone up, and that's kind of squeezing the tablets in the middle and also kind of influencing folks we're thinking, hey, maybe I just don't need to get that new tablet this year.
Yeah, that seems to be the case for me, too. I have one of the original iPads, and I find that, you know, maybe I'm surfing on a little bit, checking email, you know, play Pandora, you know, or Spotify off it, maybe check fantasy football, but it's not kind of that, you know, must-have device lying around the house.
Well, you don't need to update it, because as you point out, you're able to do all the stuff you want to do with it. And the end result is, you know, they come up with a new one for $700-$800, and you're saying, yeah, there's still a lot of other things I could do with that $700-$800 than buy a new product that just doesn't seem that much better than the old one.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. His piece is called Why Tablets Are Tanking. So is it time for Apple to actually kill the iPad or no?
Well, so the one of the points I'm making here is Apple right now is really the company that drives the tablet churn. And what Steve Jobs got and Tim Cook doesn't get, or at least doesn't seem to get, is how important churn is and why it's critical that you drive people to replace that product on a regular basis so you keep the volumes running through. The difficulty is, if you sit on that tablet for a really long time, then somebody comes up with something different, and the switching cost, you know, moving to a new iPad is going to be painful because you're five versions back, and moving to whatever this other product, new product is going to be painful. You might think, well, that time around, you might buy a Lenovo or a Dell or an IBM or a Microsoft Surface or whatever that's come out at that particular point in time. So it creates an exposure for them. It's like Microsoft experience with the Windows XP. People stuck to it, and then when it came to move to Windows 10, well, there's a lot of folks who are saying, well, maybe this time I'm going to take a look at a Mac, or maybe this time I'm going to take a look at a Chromebook. Where if they'd kept folks on the current version more aggressively all that time, they would held the person, because it's much harder, much easier for you to move from version 7 to 8 than it is to move from version 7 to version 20. So the end result is this creates an exposure for Apple, who dominates the tablet space, for competitive erosion if they don't keep that tablet churn going and get people to buy the new ones every couple of years or so.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group.
It's electric!
You can't see it. It's electric! Odds are that the quarterback of your favorite team is the most important player. Yet in spite of their prominence, Wall Street Journal reporter Stu Wu says their teams often neglect to have them practice the simple technique of sliding feet first to the turf to avoid collisions and protect their bodies. Keep that in mind as you're watching a game this weekend. Stu, who'd you talk to?
I talked to some longtime quarterbacks, including Eli Manning, who hasn't missed a start in more than 10 years. And I asked him, did anybody ever teach you how to slide? And he said, no, I've never done a sliding drill in my life, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, when you think about how important quarterbacks are to a football team.
Wow. All right, so what does Eli do? He just figures it out on his own when he wants to go down?
Yeah, he just improvises it on his own. And I was talking to him and some of the backups in the Giants, and they were saying, you know, a lot of us didn't have to slide when we were in high school. We were a lot bigger than some of these guys. Mm-hmm. And then in college, you start to realize some of these guys are huge. And they say one of the problems is that it's really hard to practice sliding during training. It's hard to think of a good drill for a couple reasons. One, you don't want to get a risk getting a cleat stuck in the turf and, you know, tearing a ligament that way. Number two, these guys are practicing an artificial turf that's stuffed with a rubber pellet, so you get some nasty rug burns if you try to practice sliding.
And so nobody has come up with anything even mildly unique?
There are two good things that I think I've seen some teams do. Michael Vick, when he was playing with the Atlanta Falcons, didn't know how to slide, so they sent him over to the Braves, the baseball team in town, to teach him how to do that. And if you go on YouTube, you can do a Google search. There's a couple of, or a YouTube search, you can see some teams have actually set up a slip and slide during training camp, and they have the quarterbacks in full pads with a football practicing that during the summer.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Stu Wu. He's got a piece entitled, Who's Teaching These NFL Quarterbacks to Slide Anyway? How could you describe actually the proper technique?
Eli Manning said the best way to think about it is pretend you're sliding into second base. It's exactly the same as it is in baseball. So what you want to do is you want to cover up the football with both arms, and then with your dominant leg, you want to kick that out straight ahead and then tuck your left leg behind you like you're sliding into second base. And you kind of roll over to the side of your dominant leg. So if you're a right-handed quarterback, kind of roll over to the right side of your right leg and just curl up the field position. That way you won't take a big hit.
How about the New York Jets? I mean, a couple of their quarterbacks are banged up probably because lack of sliding, no?
That's exactly it. And almost everything went off the rails because their starting quarterback hurt his left thumb because he didn't slide in the first quarter. And their backup quarterback, Geno Smith, got bruised in the left shoulder after taking a big hit because he also didn't slide. And after the game, both of the guys were like, you probably should have slid a little bit earlier, avoided that hit.
Who's the best? Anybody considered the best or having mastered the technique in the NFL?
My favorite guy to watch sliding is Russell Wilson, and it is absolutely no coincidence he was a star college baseball player. He was, in fact, drafted by a baseball team, the Texas Rangers. Any kids out there want to learn how to slide? Watch Russell Wilson.
Very good. All right, so any sense on, like, what the elite quarterbacks do, like an Aaron Rodgers, for example, or an Andrew Luck?
If you watch those guys definitely slide. It's not natural to a lot of guys. Michael Vick still doesn't do it, but the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Rodgers is great at sliding. Russell Wilson, as I said, Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of guys have not done it. You look at Cam Newton over at the Carolina Panthers. He doesn't slide that often, but you know what? He's 6'6", weighs like 250 pounds. He doesn't really need to slide. So it really depends on the guy. Russell Wilson's 5'11", a smaller guy. You want to be protecting yourself against those big linebackers out there.
Do you find it odd that they don't train them in some way, given the amount of money that most of these quarterbacks make?
Absolutely. I think it's something that's overlooked because it's so simple. You think that anybody can do it. But with what happened with the Jets and with two of the quarterbacks getting hurt because they didn't slide, I think NFL teams should start this every year.
All right. Thanks, Stu. Wall Street Journal reporter Stu Wu. 6 minutes now before the hour. Great story from the St. Cloud Times in Minnesota about a Marine Corps vet who wanted to honor his fellow servicemen that didn't make it home alive. Seth Jordan returned from his third overseas combat tour in 5 years and founded Dog Tag Brewing, a veteran-run nonprofit organization that features a fallen American military member on every can of beer. Mr. Jordan said Dog Tag's initial market run of its Pilsner and India Pale Ale is nearly out of stock, but the company is planning their next cans and negotiating with a major brewery for nationwide distribution of the Pilsner next year. The brewery featured a dozen families when it launched last year, but has now worked with more than 600. And it probably doesn't surprise you that Mr. Jordan, a self-proclaimed beer geek who's dabbled in home brewing, personally speaks with each family that requests a can. All of Dog Tag's proceeds are donated to local remembrance projects, often the choice of the families whose loved ones are featured on the cans. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. I'm Gordon Deal.
Did you know that more and more businesses are switching to Vonage? Seems like they know something you don't know. Like how they can unify all their offices nationwide on their own private connection to the cloud. Or maybe they know they're saving tons of headaches by eliminating unwieldy PBX phone systems. Or that Vonage's award-winning cloud-based mobility solutions allow their employees to communicate from any device, including their desk phone, desktop, laptop, mobile, or tablet, keeping them connected to customers while on the go. It's no wonder so many businesses are switching to Vonage. So what are you waiting for? Don't just switch to any cloud, switch to Vonage's award-winning cloud service. Make the switch to better. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or visit Vonage.com and find out all you need to know about why so many businesses are switching. That's 1-800-5-VONAGE or Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.